I have a couple of places I do want to read this morning, if you want to read along with us. The book of Amos, chapter 4, if you want to turn there and mark those scriptures right there. And then also I want to turn back into the book of Acts, chapter 22. Again, the book of Amos, chapter 4. And then I also want to turn back into the book of Acts, chapter 22, if you want to turn along with us this morning. We're going to read in these two places, if we can, in just a moment. Again, Amos chapter 4 and Acts chapter 22, we're going to read in just a moment. I think we all are somewhat familiar with what a wake-up call is. If I have to get up in the morning and I have a deed or I have something I'm supposed to do, then I want somebody to wake me up. Just in case, that way if I kind of slumber, that the whole purpose is, you awaken me so that I can accomplish my task. One of the great questions I often wonder is, one, is it possible for Christians to fall into a slumber? Resoundingly, I think we all would agree it is. But probably even a deeper question is that it would be this. Do we want to be awakened out of the slumber by which we're in? Or do we simply want to just be left alone? If we have a wake-up call, the whole purpose of a wake-up call is, arise, wake me up from where I'm at so that I can accomplish the task that I have before me. I have no clue what your task for this day is in the eyes of God. Now, your task might have been just to get up and go to church, and that's okay, but I'm talking about God's plans for you in this life, in this day, and in this hour. What are your plans? Do you want a wake-up call in your life? Do we as Christians want a wake-up call? Do we as a nation want a wake-up call? Do we as a church, do we want a wake-up call? Or do we just want to say, God, let us be? So this morning, I want to ask you a question. What is it going to take to bring you to God? Now, mind you that some people are easily persuaded faster and more swiftly than other people are. In other words, you might coerce the truth out of somebody easier than you can somebody else. So my question is that what is it going to take to get us, and I'm talking about you as individual churches, as a nation, or Christian as a whole, what is it going to take to turn us to God? Too many things are written off as coincidence. Too many things are written off as, well, that's just the way things are. Folks, I want to tell you, and I'm going to go ahead and read you some scriptures in a minute. God is trying to tell us, in so many places that we're going to read today, that He wants to give us a wake-up call and He wants us to listen. But the stubbornness in all of us, and I say all of us, and some of us rather I should say, the stubbornness in us may simply try to say, God, that's for somebody else, not for me. What is it going to take? And are we ready for that wake-up call? Acts chapter 22, let me read if I can, beginning in verse 17. And it came to pass that when I was come again to Jerusalem, even while I prayed in the temple, I was in a trance and saw him saying unto me, make haste and get for thee quickly out of Jerusalem, for thou will not receive, for they will not receive thy testimony concerning me. They won't hear it. People do not want to hear. Well, that's interesting. We'll talk about that in a minute. And I said, Lord, they know that I imprison and beat in every synagogue them to believe on thee. And when the blood of thy martyr Stephen was shed, I also was standing by and consenting unto his death and kept the raiment of them that slew him. He said, Lord, he said, I was there too. And he said, I needed that to get my attention. Let's go back to the book of Amos for just a minute in the fourth chapter. Amos chapter 4, and I want to skip down to about the sixth verse. And I also have given you cleanness of teeth in all of your cities. Now, what he's talking about there is that you're not lacking food. You know, again, not to get very scientific with you, but the reason that you get your the cavities and the things that happen to your teeth is if there's food that's left inside of those, then they start going through it. He said, your teeth are clean. And he said, the reason your teeth are clean is you don't have any food to eat. Now, I don't know about you, but it's not going to take us very long to go through a time of no food to eat that God's going to get my attention and saying, okay, God, here I am. I see this hunger. What are you trying to tell me? He said, I've given you cleanliness of teeth in all of your cities. He said, you have a want of bread in all of your places. In other words, you've got a hunger. You lack something. He said, but not only do you have it, you know it. But here's what the sad part of this verse is. Yet have ye not returned unto me, saith the Lord. Today, do you want a wake-up call? Or even yet, I'll ask the question, what is it going to take to get you to bring you to God? What will it take? We're going to read about a lot of people, or several people this morning, what it took to bring them to God. And I pray that these are not things that you have to experience in your life. But I will say this, that the end result is that we come closer to God, then folks, that's a good place to be. People are worried about their homes. Is it going to bring them closer to God? People are worried about their churches and the condition they're in. But the question is that going to drive us closer to God, or is it going to drive us closer to a white flag of surrender to Satan? People are worried about a nation by which we live. And yet again, I ask the question, is it going to drive us to our knees closer to God? Or does it give us the very idea that we're going to wave the white flag of surrender saying, God, things are just not the way they used to be, and it's just not going to be any different. But you know what today? God has a purpose in all of these events to drive us closer to Him. Fear will do that. Fear should drive us closer to God, not away from Him. He said, I've seen you this famine in your land. He said, you don't have any food in your teeth because there's no food to eat. He said, you're lacking in your bread. He said, but you would think in the middle of all of that, he said, you would return to me. But he tells them, he says, ye have not returned unto me, saith the Lord. He said, so let's go another step further than that. He said, not only have I kept away that your food that you have, he says, I withhold the rain from you. When there were yet 3 months to harvest, and I caused it to rain upon one city, and caused it not to rain upon another city, one piece was rained upon, and the piece whereupon it rained not withered. So here he said, did you notice? He said it was 3 months. Now what happened is that a lot of times when they were growing their crops, particularly in the grain crops, towards the end or those last few months, they wanted that rain to come in, and that rain would come in and kind of what we would say swell the crops. He said, did you notice that not only were you living in a time where you didn't have any food, he said, but did you notice right before it was time for you to bring the harvest that I sent rain to one place and not into another place? He said, did you not even open your eyes and notice that these things happened? He said, did you not notice that there that one withered and one didn't? He said, so two or three cities wandered into one city. He said, here it is. He said, you've got some people. He said, did you not notice that they came into one city talking about how that they in another city? In other words, they were not happy where they were at, so they went somewhere else. Well, that's a pretty interesting concept. But he said, to drink water, but they were not satisfied, yet have they not returned unto me, saith the Lord. Do you get this image in your mind? These people were living in a drought, so they go to another city to find what they want. They didn't get really what they want, but the problem is, instead of returning to the Lord, they've gone to place B, and then C, and then D. Instead of returning back to the Lord, he said, they went to this city, and to this city, and to this city. The simple question I want to ask the Christian people is, how many places and how long does it take us to flee from God before we will return to God, the very source of what we need? What is it going to take? Folks, today when I say what does it take, I want to go ahead and follow that up with another question. What is God capable of doing? That in itself ought to strike a deep fear in all of us of what God can do to get our attention. Can we go through a famine in our lives? Absolutely we can. Do we feel like that we are exempt from the plagues that might befall upon others, that we feel like they're not going to happen to us? Absolutely can these things happen to us. But this morning I want you to see that through all the trouble they went through, Amos asks a question, or he makes a statement. He said, yet ye have not returned to the Lord. Ye have not returned to your places. Thus saith the Lord. He said, I'm withholding all of this. He said, but you haven't done anything. Now let's go on what he says in that verse. He said, I have smitten you with the blasting and mildew. And when your gardens and your vineyards and your fig trees and your olive trees, all these things, he said, they increased. He said, all of a sudden the palm worm devoured them. All that work, and then the worm came in where you couldn't enjoy them. Yet have you not returned unto me, saith the Lord. I have sent among you the pestilence after the manner of Egypt. So here it is. He says, I've sent a plague along to you. And you know what a plague is? It's where sickness can begin to happen. He said, there's a sickness that is amongst the people. He said, in the midst of all of this sickness that he said, just like he did with the Egyptians, he said, your young men have I slain with the sword and have taken away your horses and have made the stink of your camps to come into your nostrils. Yet have ye not returned unto me, saith the Lord. I don't know if you'll agree with me or not, but I hope that you would. Do you believe that man can be stubborn? Do you think man can be somewhat hard-hearted? I didn't say hard-headed, I mean hard-hearted. Sometimes the office is right in front of us, and yet God is saying one more time, yet ye have not returned unto me. It'd be different if you had a preacher that stood up here and said, you're not listening, you're not listening, you're not listening. Folks, these are the words of the Lord, and the Lord is telling them, yet ye have not returned. Is that the end of this? Absolutely not. The 11th verse, I have overthrown some of you. Just as he said, as God overthrew Sodom and Gomorrah, and you were as a firebrand plucked out of the burning. In other words, you saw everybody else destroyed and devoured. He said, I pulled you out of that. Surely, if you got delivered out of something that was that obvious, you would begin to praise the Lord. But notice what he said there. Yet have ye not returned unto me, saith the Lord. Therefore, thus will I do unto thee, O Israel. And because I will do this unto thee, prepare to meet thy God, O Israel. I want to go back to the book of Joel for just a minute. He said, yet ye have not returned unto me. He said, you've not cast off your idols. He said, you've not gotten rid of all the sin and the oppression that's in your life. He said, you have not returned unto me. The book of Joel, chapter 2, going back just a few pages, if you want to go back to the book of, from Amos, back to the book of Joel for just a minute. That's the second chapter. The 12th verse. Therefore also now, saith the Lord, turn ye even to me with all of your heart, and with fasting, and with weeping, and with mourning. Sometimes I feel that when sin enters into our life and we don't return to the Lord, that we get bitter about our lives. Folks, bitterness is a real thing, by the way. Sometimes churches even get to that place where there's a bitterness that sets in. Sometimes nations, if they're not careful, it's the essence of bitterness, not a mournfulness or hurtfulness. But he said, he rent your heart and not your garments. And turn to the Lord your God, for he is gracious and merciful, slow to anger and of great kindness, and repenteth him of the evil. He talks about all these things that he desires for them to do. But I want to go back and let's skip on down to that Joel chapter 2 verse 24. And the floor shall be full of wheat, and the vat shall overflow with wine and oil. In other words, if you'll do these things, he said, I'll give you all the abundance of things that you need. He said, I'll restore to you the years that the locusts had eaten. He said, all the things that you lost because you wouldn't hear, he said, I'll give them to you. He said, what about the canker worm? What about the caterpillar? The palmer worm? My great army which I sent among you. You know, a lot of times we think of armies as a great military or a group of people. But you know what? The whole purpose of a military is to win a battle. Not only do I believe that God will send you people in your life to see God, I believe that there are things that happen in your life for a reason. The caterpillars, folks, they are part of the army of God. The canker worms, these are all part of the army of God. God said if these critters can cause you to awaken and see the condition you're in and drive you closer to God, then understand they are accomplishing the battle that they are sent to do. Today, folks, I want to ask you a question. What is it going to take? What's the wake-up call that we need in our life to realize that we are living in desperate, perilous times? What do we need to happen? Do we need for the Lord to return? Do we say, oh, wait a minute, Lord, now that I know that we're serious about the end of times, that we need to get ready? And I'm not here to be some prophet. What I'm telling you is, what events in our life have transpired that God is trying to get our attention, and yet we just kind of brush them off over and over and over again? Here in the book of Amos, he tells them, he says, yet ye have not returned unto me. Do you believe that God's trying to get our attention? Turn over just a few more pages, headed towards the New Testament, the book of Jonah for just a minute. Jonah chapter 1. You know what wake-up call that Jonah needed? Probably not one that you and I want to experience. Sure, we love. It makes a wonderful Sunday school lesson. It makes some really neat little punch-out and coloring cards that we can have for the kids to draw a picture of a whale. But I want to tell you something about this fish. It got Jonah's attention. It took God taking this huge fish, swallowing up Jonah. Let's read, if we can, Jonah chapter 1 and in verse 3. But Jonah rose up to flee into Tarshish from the presence of the Lord. Folks, God does not want us to run from Him. He wants us to run to Him. And he went down to Joppa, and he found a ship going to Tarshish. And so he paid the fare thereof and went into it. And he says, to go with them from Tarshish, from the presence of the Lord. But the Lord sent out a great wind. Who was in control of the wind? Do you believe the weatherman just happened to be accurate in what he predicted was going to happen? Absolutely not. The whole purpose of the wind was for Jonah. Now, did the people beside them feel the wind? Absolutely. And there was a mighty tempest in the sea, so that the ship was like to be broken. In other words, this ship. You know what old board that is bending, about to break? Here this ship is. The boards are about to break on that. The hull was about to fall apart. And they realized that something was about to happen. And it took God bringing these people to such an extent that, notice what he said in the 17th verse. The Lord had prepared a great fish to swallow up Jonah. And Jonah was in the belly of the fish 3 days and 3 nights. Today, folks, what's it going to take? What kind of wake-up call do we need to listen to God? It's not that Jonah did not hear the call of God. He just didn't want to respond to it. I'm a believer in this. I believe that God is still speaking to people. Do you believe God still speaks? Do you believe His Word is dead? Do you believe His Word is not alive? Do you believe His Word is not meant for us? Or do you believe that God is still speaking to us? I'm going to answer for you, folks. God is still speaking. Now the question is, are we listening to God? That's a whole different thing. My mouth and my ears, two different parts of my body. But are we listening to God? What is it going to take for a wake-up call? For lost people to realize they could die lost in their sins and they can go to hell. What is it going to take? Do I want bad things to happen? Absolutely not. But I'll tell you this, things are going to happen, and I pray that those things lead us closer to God, not away from Him. For we read in the book of Luke chapter 15, I'm not going to read all of this, but there in Luke chapter 15, we read that it took one of the children going into a time of bankruptcy and poverty and not having anything before he finally turned back to the Lord. Luke 15, chapter 13. Luke chapter 15 and verse 13, it says, and not many days after the younger son gathered all together his journey into a far country, and there wasted its substance on riotous living. Here it is. You know, he lived his life. He went and squandered everything that he had, and he got rid of it. And yet it took him losing everything he had to finally get to a place where he would return to the Lord. What is it going to take? The book of Isaiah. Let me read to you for just a minute. It took Isaiah chapter 6. Let me read to you. Isaiah chapter 6 and verse 1, it took Uzziah dying. It says, in the year, Isaiah chapter 6 and verse 1, in the year that King Uzziah died, I saw also the Lord sitting upon a throne, high and lifted up, and his train filled the temple. Sadly, but how truthfully that we can probably all understand this, that it was when King Uzziah died that Isaiah saw the Lord. Today, folks, I pray that we, even if it takes death itself, that we will see the Lord there. People a lot of times think death is something that is cruel. Sometimes people think death is God's way of punishing us. There is a difference in God punishing us versus God punishing sin. God wants us to overcome sin. That's why that's the whole purpose of His Son Jesus, to overcome that. But you see today that when King Uzziah died, he died the death of a leper, which had to be a painful, excruciating death that he died. Isaiah saw him suffer. Isaiah, through all of that he did, he said, when King Uzziah died, he says, that he began to see that. He said, when he did, he said, he saw the Lord sitting upon a throne, high and lifted up, and his train of that of his robe, it said, and it filled the temple. Today, do you believe that God today, that even in the midst of death, that He can get our attention to where we can see Him, and that we can see that He is there with us, that He is there to protect us and guide us? Do you believe in those things? For I am a firm believer in these things. Book of Daniel chapter 4. Let me read you about what it took for Nebuchadnezzar. The sin and the pride of the people had kept Nebuchadnezzar from the Lord. And finally, do you know what it means to have just a nervous breakdown? In other words, he just couldn't take it anymore, the condition things were in. Notice what happened for Nebuchadnezzar here. Daniel chapter 4 and in verse 33. The same hour was the thing fulfilled upon Nebuchadnezzar. And he was driven from men. Now, different translations may word this a little bit different. But do not get the implication here that this was one of Nebuchadnezzar's animals that was acting like this. This was him. This was the state he had gotten to. That he did eat the grass as the oxen. And his body was wet with the dew of heaven, till his hairs were grown like eagle's feathers and his nails like bird's claws. Can you see the condition that he had gotten to? Is that, notice what he did, but let's read that 34th verse. And at the end of the days, I, Nebuchadnezzar, lifted up mine eyes into heaven, and my understanding returned unto me, and I blessed the Most High. And I praised and honored him that liveth forever, whose dominion is an everlasting dominion, and his kingdom is from generation to generation. So here is a man today that the sin and the pride of the people had driven him away from God. He got to a point that he was eating and he looked like an absolute animal. For he said here, he was eating the grass like the oxen. His body was wet with the dew that was from heaven. He wouldn't even seek shelter. His hairs were grown like that of eagle's feathers. There was no cleanliness about him. He said he was dirty. And he said his nails were like bird's claws. That's the state that Nebuchadnezzar had gotten into. And you know what? A lot of times we say, God, don't let me get to that state in my life. But you know what? Even in that state, notice what Nebuchadnezzar did. At the end of the days, I, Nebuchadnezzar, lifted up my eyes unto heaven, and my understanding returned unto me. Folks, today, what is it going to take? What is the wake-up call that we need? And I'm even looking at these scriptures. What kind of condition do we have to get in our life? What kind of condition does a church have to get in? What kind of condition does a nation have to get in before we realize, God, we need to return to you? That's not a question that I'm trying to answer to you. It's a point that I want you to ponder this morning. What wake-up call? The reason of a wake-up call is there's a purpose, there's a mission, there's an objective to be accomplished, and we do not want to sleep through it. For you know what our nature is when things are not right? We just want to sleep through it. That's what we want to do. We just want to sleep through it. Just knock me out, as we might say, so I don't have to experience the pain and the torture of what's going on. Folks, today, may we arise from the slumber we're in.
May we awaken out of the comfort zone that we're in and realize is that we need to turn to God that He might be able to awaken us. For I'm reminded of these scriptures in the book of Acts, chapter 16. I've never lived through what I would call a massive earthquake. Not long ago, yes, there was a time when a few things fell off of a shelf and maybe moved a few books, but not a massive earthquake like this. But notice what the Philippian jailer had to go through. Acts 16 and verse 22. The multitude rose up together against them, and the magistrates rent off their clothes and commanded to beat them. 24th verse says, who receiving such a charge thrust them into the inner prison and made their feet fast in the stocks. 26th verse, and suddenly there was a great earthquake, so that the foundations of the prison were shaken, and immediately all the doors were open and everyone's bands were loosed. Today, folks, do I want to wish an earthquake upon anybody here? No. Do I want to wish upon you to get to the state of Nebuchadnezzar in your mental state? Absolutely not. Where your nerves are just shot, as we might say. Do I want to see you get to the point as the one son that went and squandered away everything, where you're living in bankruptcy and you have no food, you have no shelter? Do I want to see anybody get to that state? Absolutely not. Do we want to see anybody get to a state like it was with Jonah, where there was a great fish that's going to swallow you up and you're going to spend 3 days in the very belly of a fish? Do I want that to happen to you? Absolutely not. But I want to not leave that incomplete. I want to finish that. Folks, if that's what it takes to get your attention and to get our attention for God to speak to us, then I pray that the fish would swallow us. I pray that our nerves would get absolutely rattled to a point that we turn to the Lord. That we go stripped of all of our food and all of our raiment, of everything that we have, so that we might return to the Lord. I pray that all of these things would happen if the end result is driving closer to God. Preacher, we don't have revival here until about June. We still got a long way before we get into our revival season, folks. We may not be here come June. We may not be here come Thanksgiving. And that's not far away, is it? And I say that not because of some prophecy that God revealed unto me. I'm saying that because the scriptures are true, that God is speaking. God is talking to us. He's trying to get our attention. And what we do is we totally ignore it. Just like we read to you over and over and over again there in the book of Amos. Over and over again, he said. This is Amos chapter 4, verse 6. Yet have you not returned unto me, saith the Lord. He said, I held these things back from you. And he says, there was no rain upon one city but another. He says, but yet, he said, you still would not return unto me, saith the Lord. He said, I've smitten you with blasting and mildew. He says, and when your gardens and your vineyards and your fig trees and your olive trees increased. He said, then all of these insects and bugs came. He said, devoured them. He said, you still will not return to me, saith the Lord. I have sent among you the pestilence after the manner of Egypt. In other words, these plagues were coming. Your young men have I slain with the sword. And I have taken away your horses. And I have made this out of the stink of your camps to come upon your nostrils. Yet have ye not returned unto me, saith the Lord. Today, folks, I could keep you here for a long time. And the scriptures are filled full of people that lost everything. Some restored, some did not. But the question this morning is, do we want that wake-up call? What is it going to take? And I'm not here to say that it's bad to the point that it's going to get worse. But I will say this, folks. The God that can do anything, what does it take for Him to do to get our attention? Today, folks, we're living in some scary times. We're living in some troublesome times. And I'll tell you this, and I don't mind saying this, has absolutely nothing to do with the political society we're living in. It has everything to do with people not worrying about the words of the Lord. That is the great fear that I have around our land and our country. Is that even the saints of God, the Word of God, well, all it'll apply to my life if it's important, but otherwise I'm not worried about it, folks. Jesus warns us, and in those end times, He said, people are going to fall away. Fall away. In order to fall away, you've got to be there. Folks, there's people that saved and they drift away. There's people that used to abide by the Word of God. They're not abiding by the Word anymore. Folks, today, it's scary to think about all the things in the saints of God, how we drift away from Him. What is it going to take? Do we need a plague to hit us? Do we need some kind of a tragic event to come in our life for God to wake us up? Or can we say right now, God, You are speaking to us. We're listening to You. We're going to repent. We're going to turn. And we're going to let You, Lord, supply the needs in the way that You're able to supply. This morning, what's it going to take? Do you want that wake-up call?